Hello again, Gallatin Valley. Welcome to community radio station KGVM 95.9 or KGVM.org. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist, as the co-host. Thank you for your support, and thank you for the support of Public Education Committee of the Montana Psychological Association. We have a great program today, and by the way, Happy New Year's Eve. Dr. Suzanne will now introduce.
Why would a radio show under the umbrella of the Montana Psychological Association have a show about comedy and laughter? The Mayo Clinic has research that may give us a clue. Their article, "Stress Relief is No Joke," cites their studies, both short-term and long-term. Laughter can stimulate many organs. Intake of oxygen-rich air stimulates hearts, lungs, and muscles, and increases endorphins released from the brain, which are those hormones that make us feel good, and reduces the stress response, decreases heart rate, and decreases blood pressure. Plus, stimulates circulation. Plus, increases muscle relaxation. Whew! That's short-term. Long-term, it improves the immune system. Laughter chases away negative thoughts that give us chemical reactions that increase stress. And positive thoughts release neuropeptides that help fight stress and serious illness. So, we're thrilled to bring you a recipe for mental health for this new year. We're proud to welcome the last best comedy troupe, that is comedy troupe. Our own Bozeman Medical Wonders, our comedy team, and a prescription for your new year. Welcome, Marley Harmon and Levin Connor. O'Connor.
Hi. Welcome. Hi. Thanks for having us.
We're so glad to have you. Mm-hmm. And we really feel that each of us needs to include more humor in our lives. And, you know, sometimes it's just the everyday things that bring the most humor. I remember years and years ago, I heard a comedian talking about having an important meeting in New York City, and he put on his best suit, and he was going down into the subway. So while he was waiting for his train, he set the newspaper down and sat on the bench. And he's sitting there waiting for his train, and a fellow comes along and looks at him and says, "You reading that?" So, who else would have noticed but a comedian how humorous that just life can be? And obviously from the research, we'll quote from Harvard and the NIH, all of those research studies that really underline what you do as a service to each of us, to humanity. So, first of all, tell us about your comedy troupe, how you started, and then tell us where you are and what's coming up, please.
All right. That's a big introduction.
Yeah.
Feels more important than I would have ever considered it to be. But thank you. So we are two of the three owners of Last Best Comedy. And we have both stand-up and improv comedy programming Tuesday through Saturday nights most weeks. The schedule is moves around a little bit, but generally alternating between stand-up and improv. We also offer classes in both stand-up and improv. And generally have an awfully fun time down in our little basement venue. It's a really warm and fun community in town, and we bring performers from all over the country through. And it's the most fun.
Tell us exactly where you're located and how people would get there, how they could get tickets,
yeah,
and what to look for here.
We are located in the basement of the Bozeman Hotel, which is 321 East Main, so right below the poorhouse. There's a little alley entrance, and that's how people get into the space. We have a website that is lastbestcomedy.com that has our full list of shows and classes. We have a lot of stuff coming up in January. Some great touring comedians, Adam Mamawala, Ty Barnett,
Jordan Jensen.
We really pride ourselves in the quality and caliber of comedians that we're able to bring into town. They're just a really great bunch of people. Levin and our other booking guy have done a really great job of kind of bringing in these people you may not have heard of, but they're up and coming and they're just crushing it. So that's what's that. And yeah. I think your other question was, how did we get into this stuff? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or did you have anything else?
We could fill up the whole thing on that. No, I was only going to say, I guess I did have something else. I said no, and then what I was going to add. In booking, at least the stand-up comics, we really strive for the experience down there to be a unifying one. In a time where people have very different opinions about everything, a space where we can be unified by the fact that a person is making you laugh regardless of what your opinions are outside of that room is a rare moment these days.
How healthy is that?
Mm-hmm. And one that we think is a pretty healthy and important one. One small group of people at a time coming through and sitting next to each other and having a common experience full of laughter is a healing kind of a feeling.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got the medical research to prove it.
Yeah. It's good to know.
Since the end result is laughter or mm-hmm. humor, I was wanted to ask, how does one get there? I've noticed over the years in watching comedians, there are so many different styles.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them seem kind of brutal, like Don Rickles
sure.
or others who kind of... He makes every, it seemed to me, every performance a roast.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you know you're going to a roast, I guess you could expect it. I've seen him sometimes doing roasting where they weren't expecting it.
Right.
Then there was the Academy Awards where someone was trying to be funny and got slapped.
Yeah.
That's yeah. right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Styles, is it just everybody has their own? Or is there categories?
Yeah, I mean, I think that everybody has their, yes, every comedian, I think, is unique in their own perspective and point of view and how what they find funny. And I think that it's true for everybody. We will all resonate differently with other comedians because that's how we favor, if Don Rickles, if you grew up in a family that was that way, you would go and you would laugh your butt off because, this was my grandpa or, it is a subjective thing. But the thing about comedy that's unifying that kind of I think there is just there's an inherent kind of tension established with when you go see a show or people are trying to make you laugh. And so it doesn't always matter what the style is. You're probably going to laugh. Just yep. because there's this kind of...
the preset notion.
Yes, you're just waiting for something.
It's permission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also, as your story at the beginning spoke of, sitting on the newspaper, that there are... Comedians are really training themselves to be... to view the world with curiosity all the time. And so they can describe an experience that we've all encountered, but maybe not given any conscious, intentional thought to. And when someone else acknowledges an experience that you've also held, but maybe been embarrassed that happened to you or whatever, it is that's usually the catalyst for releasing laughter. And it is also, in a room of people all sharing a laugh about a thing that you might have privately felt shameful about or embarrassed about, suddenly you can feel camaraderie in that experience, and that's a pretty wonderful
Someone said that incongruity has a lot to do, like you just mentioned. Oh, I didn't know anybody ever thought that or talked about that.
Right.
And then you just blurt it out.
Right.
It defuses
it does.
What's been an issue quite often. I love that aspect.
Very fundamentally, comedy is creating and relieving tension. Molly and I perform improv comedy. Our background is all in improvisation, but Last Best Comedy also has stand-up comedy, which is not that thing where the material has been written in advance and is delivered and is repeatable. And those both have different dynamics with the room, but that aspect of playing with tension and releasing it and creating it and releasing it is true across the board.
Do you have like a rating system? X, R, T, because I've heard all.
Yeah.
Depends. You know.
Yeah. We did pretty much just say 18 and up is our content warning.
Okay.
And in improv, we don't really know what's going to happen. And with stand-ups, we don't, you know, we don't review a set before we would bring somebody on stage. So pretty much you could hear or say anything on that stage and it may or may not suit your fancy.
You might not love everything.
That's
also the nature of any kind of art that's worth anything. Yeah,
exactly. So I wonder, have you always been funny? what made you think that you were going to be comedians?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Would you like to go first?
Would I like to go first? Because you want to think about it a little bit? I feel like you have a good answer for this. I don't think I do. I think I just always enjoyed comedy, and I always had a playfulness with my friends growing up that we just liked to create funny things. And I was not trained in comedy until my youngest was 3 years old. So like I didn't start taking any classes or anything until I was in my early 30s. Mm-hmm. And so was I always funny? Sure.
there you go.
But I think that I just gravitated towards that connection, towards that honesty, like the kind of honesty that comedy allows you to have with yourself, with the other people in the room with you. I don't that's how I came to it. I wanted to try something new. I had always enjoyed it and always thought maybe I would be good at something like this, and then just loved it and kept going.
And that might encourage people listening this evening to consider doing things they might like to do.
Absolutely.
And Levin, how did you come to this?
Very unexpectedly. I had always, you know, loved joking around with my friends and maybe too much. That would show up on my report cards throughout childhood. But that was never a goal or aspiration of mine. If anything, in public settings, I was a very, very shy guy. My dad is still amazed that this is where his son is. His most shy son is suddenly intentionally getting on stage a couple times every week. To connect it to sort of what we're talking about, in a moment of kind of darkness and sadness for me personally, I bumped into an improv class and it felt really good and felt really nice to be connected with other people. It then just has continued to be kind of a source of guidance for me. And it, you know, has healed me out of that place and has been really proof that like anybody can benefit from improvisation and from comedy in general, and it feels really good, and it is so healthful and helpful to feeling connected, even in the moments that you might not feel the most funny.
Just therapy of sorts.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very unintentionally. I might not have gone to therapy, but I would take this class, and the class did a better job than I could have imagined.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are those in the medical world who are using laughter as therapy, and even fake laughter. They're saying, go ahead and laugh, and usually it generates then real laughter because it's hilarious to try to laugh, and they see real results with that, and so you could think of what you're doing as
I read. I think it's in the book Blink, that Malcolm Gladwell book Blink, but I could be mistaken on that. But there is a study It might not be from that book. Anyway, I read a study. It might also be from a book called The Brain That Changes Itself, which is about neuroplasticity. But in the study, they were measuring that even if you just hold a pencil in between your teeth, which forces you in basically to the shape of a smile, your brain chemistry starts to release chemicals as if you are happier than you were before. That, like, we are that malleable, and that, like, you know, holding a pencil in your teeth for a minute can be an uplifting daily habit of yours. So forced fake laughter is almost as effective as the real deal. Yeah. And same with smiles. So mm-hmm. it is an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm. And they measured it at the, you know, at the level of medical technology and found that to be true as well. I know there's one researcher, Dr. Ashton, a lady that she said, all I do is work. And all I do is just, you know, produce this information. I'm a medical researcher and I'm way too serious. And I've got to start loosening up. Her stress levels were high, and she just never had a chance to just simply laugh. So she decided to wear a jeweled tiara for 1 month, every day, even on her TV show about medical concerns. And it generated so much laughter and so much positivity. So we often talk about on this show, there's cognitive, which is what we're doing now. We're thinking about laughter, we're thinking about humor. But there's another level called metacognitive, where you're kind of looking down on the conversation and you're kind of monitoring how well the conversation is going. And so what Dr. Ashton did was the metacognitive thing that I've just really got to shake this up and I've got to get more humor and more positivity and not this stress and push in my life. And so I think you all could generally consider yourselves as therapists.
Can we get that in certificate?
All right. Okay.
So yep. we can put it up in the club.
Yep. I do consider that now.
Yeah, it has a lot of therapeutic things, and I think it is dependent on the person and whether they're ready or available to that.
We do find, I think, we do find that thing a lot, and given the town we live in and the time we live in, and how many people are new to town that haven't been here before and don't know how to connect and have relationships with, you know, really actually in the room relationships with other people, that our theater and our classes have been really supportive of people that way too, as just it's a sort of built in on ramp for connection.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a psychologist, we've had so many shows about that kind of social interactional connectivity mm-hmm. being one of the most important factors in mental health, and one of the missing factors often in depression. And Montana has, unfortunately, a very high rate of depression and suicide. So we need much more of this kind of activity, and we need to have you out here more. And I was thinking about each and every article I read in preparing for this also talked about one thing humor should never be. And they were saying you should never make fun of another person. That while it might be funny, it harms everybody who listens. Mm-hmm. And even those who laugh might feel badly about laughing. So the role of almost every researcher was to say, let's keep it positive and let's not use it as a spear against those all around us.
Except in the case of Don Rickles.
we were talking about that earlier. Yeah. And the roasts and mm-hmm. the... I think there can be a pleasant roast almost.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, and when you're roasting somebody in a... I think, you know, to what you're speaking about is kind of a it's not really comedy. I wouldn't even think it's just, you know, like making fun of somebody. It's not like a joke. It's not like a, I don't know. But when people are truly like roasting somebody that they love, which is what the roasts are about, right? Like,
yes.
Somebody that they truly love, it's more ribbing and not as much. And it's
yeah.
smarter than like what you're talking about, which yeah. is kind of going for the lowest.
Yeah.
Lowest form of what you mm-hmm. think is funny because you, and I think it comes from, yeah.
And that word smart that you just used rings a bell for me because much of the research that I read talked about the higher intellectual levels of those in comedy mm-hmm. that they have to have.
You all would agree, right?
Yes,
I agree. So, I mean,
that's not a surprise.
Is, yeah, this surprise. Is all stuff we've been thinking.
Affirming it all.
Yeah.
Do you have a plan B, like you're working and nobody's laughing? Do you have something you fall back on, like a...
Like in a show?
Yeah, three or four jokes.
Improv doesn't really allow for that. And honestly, anytime you think to try and do it, it is sort of counter-effective. The nature of what makes improv work is that the audience is in on the agreement that we don't know what we're going to say while we're on stage, and that makes most people very afraid on our behalf. It's an empathetic dynamic. One where they are really rooting for the performers to succeed in the face of this absolute monster. Most people find public speaking terrifying.
Yes.
Public speaking without a script, doubly so. Public speaking without a script and the expectation of comedy is too much. And so you really do have a lot of empathy in the room mm-hmm. for that. And you betray some of that empathy if you do something that feels premeditated or breaks that trust.
I used to watch Robin Williams. He'd be like, he would just go wild on an improv kind of thing.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, I think some stand-ups probably have jokes in their back pocket about a plan B or something like that. But, you know, It, like I said before, it's very subjective. So sometimes a stand-up is going to crush in a set and just be like, man, I got this. And then the next audience is just kind of not there.
Yeah.
Not the same audience. Nobody's the same. But
and that dynamic is different, too. A stand-up, an audience that goes to see a stand-up show is there to judge it more than they are with an improv show. That they know that you have written your material. And so the expectation is that you
gotta
are supposed to be good.
Yes, they sit there.
So
like
make me laugh.
Their arms crossed.
Yeah.
Laugh, guys.
I'll see about this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there is a little more of that sensation when it's stand-up comedy than there is with improv uh-huh. comedy. Mm-hmm. And the room feels different night to night when you go down there as a result. Mm-hmm. But in the end, nobody wants to watch a person in pain on stage,
so
right? So
just
we're
helping you.
Yeah. So everyone's happy to play their part and cheer for it to go well.
In the early days of TV, with the family shows and the cast, they'd have canned laughter in the background.
Oh yeah,
somebody I could push a button and it actually, as I remember, as a child growing up with that. That it would make me laugh.
Yep.
To hear all these people laughing. So it's really contagious, it seems.
Yep.
It is. And it's one of the reasons why during the pandemic started and we couldn't be in rooms together laughing, we tried to do a couple of shows over Zoom. And it is very challenging. And part of that is because when you're in a room together, like sitting close to one another, the laughter is contagious, and so is that tension, and so is that just feeling of, I don't know, being in it together. And when you're just at home by yourself, you just don't, like, you're not laughing out loud as much because you don't have, like, one, maybe not necessarily the permission, but it's just, there's definitely something contagious about
laughter. Absolutely. I can see that. I would love to hear more about your classes, what each class is about, and when they're offered, and who's good to come to class, and...
Okay.
Me? Sure. I'll start, and you fill in all the places that I miss.
Sure.
Who's good to come to class, I think, is if you have any little scratch in the back of your mind that this might sound appealing to you, but it's being overwhelmed by voices of like, you're not a performer, you're not quick enough, or you're not, to put those voices aside and trust that that little scratch is worth pursuing. Anybody truly can have a great time. They don't all have to grow up to be Don Rickles or Robin Williams. That doesn't need to be the goal of this. Mm-hmm. The experience of learning about it and surrounding yourself by people who are viewing the world with curiosity and are in a room for a few hours a week trying to make each other laugh, all by itself is a huge win. So we have Improv and Stand-Up 101 starting in January. Those are open with no prerequisite or prior knowledge needed. Truly anyone can register for those. And
it's mostly adult. And it's adults. Yes. We've had some exceptions with some high school kids, 16 or 17, but it's not for kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We will have those classes at some point, but at the moment, yes, adults. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so it's like how long? An hour's class? 2 hours?
2.5 hour class.
2.5 hour
once
class.
A week. Mm-hmm. Yep.
For 6 weeks for with six those weeks. Intro classes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then if...
How expensive are these classes?
That's great.
That's question. A really great question.
I wish our education director were here, but she's not here today.
Yeah, I want to say it's $225 or $250.
I think mm-hmm. that's right.
And
that's cheaper than medication might be.
Yeah, it's
because
true.
Because you would definitely be hearing about laughter, exposed mm-hmm. to laughter, and indulging in laughter to yep. go to these classes.
Yes.
So.
It also gets you into a bunch of shows, included in that, so you can add some more laughter into your week by just coming mm-hmm. and watching and being in the audience while other people are doing it.
Yep.
So this is one of the best recipes for good health there is around. Yes. Really, truly.
It's yes. the thing that has worked truly the best for me. I can't, you know, everything always feels broad when you look at it statistically, that this is generally good for people. And mm-hmm. I believe that to be true. Largely because it has proved to be so good for me that I know it works.
Well, I have to remind you once again, medical science is backing up yeah. that statement.
Yeah,
very much so. And so, talking about the classes, then, would you recommend the comedic world to young people or older people, even anybody who wanted to go into the field? What do you say to those folks
that are wanting to get started in comedy?
That might be considering it, have thought about it.
Yeah, I think it's a great place to start. I do get this question sometimes. They'll say like, you know, oh, my friends have always told me I'm so funny, and I really do think I'd be good at this. What is your recommendation? Where should I start? And I would always put it back to them, because improv is, because we offer two kind of intro classes into that comedy world, stand-up or an improv side. And stand-up is, it's developing your own sense of humor, I think, your own voice in humor. And with improv, it's a little more, it's just a more collaborative process, I think, that you will develop your own voice and your own perspective and have, you know, that. But you're not, in stand-up, it's a more individual-based, it's a very supportive class, but you're writing your own material kind of stuff mm-hmm. in an improv.
Yeah.
It's a class of people writing material together, essentially. Every scene is a collaboration. So it depends on the person and what they feel like their strengths are. I think improv probably lends itself to kind of like sketch. You know, it's the other thing that people are interested in writing are sketches, things you would see on like Saturday Night Live. And I think improv lends itself to that because you can get some ideas by playing in this space and then you can go home and write it. And I don't know. Maybe I don't really... No,
I think
specifically,
that's
but that's what I would recommend to people.
One's a team sport and one is an individual one. So there's certainly some of that. I'm trying to think what the root question was.
What would you recommend to somebody who thought they wanted to go into comedy?
Well, I mean, I would absolutely recommend it to anyone. If a person is asking that question, they're probably inclined to want to try it and are just seeking a little bit of permission mm-hmm. to do it and not feel embarrassed for that one or whatever is sort of holding them back. Jerry Seinfeld has an interview in a movie called The Comedian where he's talking about, his process with that was that when he was a kid, everybody was always joking around. He was under the impression that everyone was funny. And then gradually, all of his friends kind of grew up and stopped being funny. And he didn't ever want to. So he just kept doing it. And now he's kind of, they all went and got serious. His refusal to do so is why he is where he is. But I like that idea. It's something, as you grow up, play is often kind of frowned upon. The older you get, being silly is frivolous or looked down upon. At some point, we societally make that pivot, unfortunately. And it's so healthy. It's so necessary and healthy, actually. So finding a way as an adult back into having permission and a space to do that.
That's profound, what you just said, that we tend to dismiss the need for humor. But one of the things I keep hearing in hearing you guys talk is the connectivity in the classes or when one comes to a show, because you're connected with those improv actors up there. You're yearning for them to have a good, successful outcome, and you buy into that. That's human connectivity, which is so healthy. Yep. And even a stand-up comedian, you have some feelings for them. But again, like you said, you're looking at their material and you might feel that you're a bit of a good critic here, which, shame on you.
What do you do for people who tell jokes and they're the only ones laughing at themselves? I tend to be in that category. And she said, did you notice you're the only one laughing about that?
I mean, I think
if it's not at the expense of somebody else, I feel like that's the laughter. Yeah, that's still really good for you. I think that's what we find in comedy. It's when we try, like what you were saying, which when we're trying to make somebody else laugh, it sometimes will fall flat. But if you're genuinely finding humor in things yourself, and like, to me, this is funny, you're not. It will be funny to somebody else because there's that just kind of like genuine honesty about that humor. I don't know.
I don't think until today you guys have stimulated so many thoughts about the different types of humor I've seen over the years, each of which I thought was funny. There are those who seemingly always play on words, like double meaning, triple meaning, and you never, never thought of that kind of thing, the incongruity of it, laughing. Or one guy, and I haven't heard anyone else like him, he's gone now in the past, but he always reversed syllables of words. Did you remember any? He would start off and he'd move things around and you're trying to figure out what he was saying. But he could do it so well that he could do an entire sentence with just reversing syllables and first letters and words. And people were just laughing. What? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Monty something, I think. I can't think of his last name. Huh. And also mentioning skits, like... Mm-hmm. Some people, I guess, are really good about playing other characters. Mm-hmm. Like, I know a lot of people will play a Trump, like on Saturday Night Live, or any other political figure, or an actor, another actor. But that can be very, very funny, except for the person they're playing, perhaps. Yeah.
Well, I think again, like, when it's done smartly and not in a, I think...
Yeah, comics talk a lot about punching up and not punching down. Uh-huh. That idea being like, if you're going to make fun of somebody in a position of higher power than you.
Because you're not humiliating, you're not on purposefully.
Right, and even if you are, you're teasing somebody who, at least theoretically, is in a position to withstand that. They're being validated and reinforced in so many ways.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe, joking about their extreme wealth, it shouldn't offend them.
Sure.
So, something positive up, I like that, rather than down. I know you mentioned Seinfeld a couple of minutes ago here, and I was reading about his career when I was looking into this, and it took him a long time. In fact, he said he was 37 years old before he really began to succeed. Maybe in the 34 when he got on the show and then it took off. Mm-hmm. So in talking about this as a profession, and when I was asking you, you know, what would you recommend? I read several articles that it can be difficult, and I know we've had many artisans on the show, maybe from the sculpture world or the music world, who also had a day job because they, you know, were still struggling in that particular artistic arena, which makes us very sad. I know in New York City, where our daughter lives, there's a huge apartment building right on the riverfront, and it's for artists, and it's very low rent, and that, you know, most of them couldn't live there otherwise. And it's one way we could help. So how could we help the artists more? Of course, one thing is come out. We're going to have you tell us again where to come. Sure. Don't let me forget that. But I think it's a profession that is eminently helpful to mankind and humanity. And so when we recommend this to young people, do they need a day job while they're getting started, or what do we think?
Yes. I mean, if there isn't, you know.
There's not a ton of money in comedy, except for the kind of higher. You have to work very, very hard, and you have to be doing a lot of traveling to kind of make the...
That bands,
the,
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of similarities there with musicians, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think also having a day job can only benefit your comedy in true form, because, you know, I think that that's like what you were saying, Levin, about the curiosity. It's like a life curiosity, and you have to have these other experiences to have an observation, or to notice like the way that everyday people are behaving, or experiences that are, if you lived in a comedy bubble, it would be hard to constantly be coming up with materials.
Yeah.
I do think the, you know, yes, you have to maintain your income some other way, but that also affords you the sort of the side benefit of that is that it is non-polluted in the other payment that it gives you. The like the fun of it and the joy of it is all yours, and it doesn't need to be compromised for the benefit of greater financial success, that you are, you know, doing this thing purely to fill you up in these other ways that that might not be there is valuable. Seinfeld arriving later, I think, is often true. He's very famous, so we know his story a little bit more, but, you know, comedy takes experience and maturity often to be able to see the world and have experienced enough to be able to share in it. We have the benefit of a historically important comedian living in Paradise Valley in Rich Hall. He lives there full time. He comes over and does a variety of things here at Last Best Comedy, and he's delightful. And he is, you know, he's been inside of comedy for a long time, and he is still totally keen and totally sharp and totally relevant. And it's wonderful to watch somebody with that much experience still passionately working inside of an art form. It's a real master, and it's really a really neat thing to have around.
Mm-hmm. And that's a significant point as well. You don't age out of being a comedian like you do other things where they have a cutoff age.
Yeah, sure.
Like teaching.
You can. You see a lot of performers stop wanting to do the work. Like, it does take consistent. You have to stay in shape like an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of shape looks different. It's about awareness and presence and paying attention. And you certainly can see people who have been very funny who then feel very confident that the way they were funny 20 years ago is still relevant to how things are funny now. And if they are trying to do that, it feels dated. Mm-hmm. And they're no longer in that position. Rich is actually an outlier, I would say, in that he is still very much
He isn't relying on past successes.
Not at all.
And he's keeping up
he's
with
creating.
He's writing trends. All the time, mm-hmm. And is, you know, as you know, is fascinating for that. But you can certainly see when people are satisfied that they've essentially retired from comedy, but they can still go back and do their old material, but it doesn't resonate
it's,
the same
it's
way.
It's not relevant.
Yep. Yeah.
I was reading that Steve Martin went through much of the same experience. Someone said recently that he, for a long time, he was not successful. Things weren't funny to people that he was, things he was trying to do. But then I think of him as one of the funniest people, particularly the movies Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, All of Me in particular. Mm-hmm. To me, they were just hilarious. But he apparently didn't start off with a bang at all. It was, in fact, years before he was recognized as really being funny.
I mean, yeah, I think I would never want to compare comedians to athletes. But, or in your guys' case, you guys clearly are very sharp, like, and are continuing to practice your guys's, you know, expertise because you're actively seeking out new information, you're actively learning, and I think it's the same with comedy. You have to actively have that practice of curiosity, experience, writing things down. I mean, humor is a practice. It's just like meditation or relaxation or anything. You can't just say, like, be funny. You have to
currency, you have to, yeah. relevance. Mm-hmm. I think that connectivity, too. You mm-hmm. have to stay connected, I think, might be what you guys were trying to say.
Yep, definitely. Absolutely.
Do you ever watch Mrs. Maisel?
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah.
Which we loved. And it showed a lot of the vicissitudes of trying to be a comedian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. In that time frame, too.
Yeah.
Interesting. It was fun.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask if you would go over again where you're located mm-hmm. and what the classes, the names of the classes for people out there mm-hmm. so we can get some specifics in before we go too much further.
Okay. We're located at 321 East Main. It's the Bozeman Hotel. We are in the basement portion of that building right below the poorhouse. And you can find all of our information, our address, all of our shows, all of our classes on lastbestcomedy.com. And our classes that are starting up in January are going to be an improv 101 class, which is a foundations of improv class. It's a 6-week class weekly. And then we have a stand-up 101. It's called the First Five. So that's where you write your first 5 minutes of material to take to any open mic, Suzanne. you can take to any open mic, and that also is a 6-week class. We also offer kind of like some more advanced levels in improv. I think we're offering 3 more advanced level improv classes. So we move into more long form, other forms, working on characters. And then we also are offering advanced stand-up class as well, which is called Honing Your Voice, which is kind of what we were talking about a little bit, where you figure out what your specific, unique point of view is and how to approach things in a humorous way.
Wow.
I wanted to add one mental health thing. I know in life we're oftentimes reading about someone who appeared to have it all together and seemingly happy, and then all of a sudden you're aware they've been very depressed, and maybe, in fact, we read about cases of suicide, that kind of thing. And so I'll just point out to the audience that if you're in that category and you really think you can't talk to anybody, you can call 988 or 211. The 988 is a national number, 211 is a local one. The help center or other people willing to talk to you. But these people who appear to be happy obviously aren't. They need more laughter. They need to learn humor, and hopefully by this show today or any other contact they may have, they would be willing to reach out to someone. Come to the comedy club, start laughing, look for a way to start from the inside, but ask for help if you need it.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to also say something kind of piggybacking off of that, which is that a lot of people going through those experiences do find the comedy club. And so we have a community full of a lot of people that have experienced similar things or going through struggles. And it's kind of a misfit community of people, you know, just getting around and playing together and laughing together. And so if you are feeling alone in that kind of experience,
it's one of our favorite kinds of groups.
Yes. So anyways, it is a place where we welcome all people, and those people are also very welcoming. Like the community in itself, people that are in that basement space are just wonderful.
I had another question. Does the university here have any courses on humor? Shouldn't there be a major?
There should be. I took a laughter yoga class one time.
Laughter in yoga.
Laughter yoga is what it was called. It was kind of what you were talking about, which is you fake laugh.
Yep.
You spend times just fake laughing, and then it develops into real laughter.
I read some of the research on those types of classes, and they really are effective. And just studying about this made me try to be more humorous, you know. Like, I've got three hits this morning where I make people laugh, you guys.
It makes me think I've had one or two friends that had a very unique humorous laugh. Michael O'Keefe. He had one that it would go somewhere and sit with him. If something was funny, they all end up laughing at him because of his laugh.
Yeah.
So if you have a funny laugh, use it.
Yes, 100%. Please share it. Please do.
Yeah.
No, I don't think the university offers any classes specifically in humor that I'm aware of.
Not that I know of.
They teach acting up there, and they do have an improv club that they,
we've matriculated with colleges and universities all of our lives. I've never seen anything about this really, you know.
Yeah.
It would be a really good pitch. It would be a really good pitch for maybe the psychology department to, or the social work or,
you know. It's already got the research done to back it up.
And one of the cognitive distortions that people get depressed or have other mental health problems is that they personalize everything. And they must have been critical of me, or I bet they were talking. This would be good to kind of dunk them in a course of having people laugh with them, at them, together, that they could be desensitized. Like, it's not all about me. We're all in this together.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, so that's great. I would love to plug a book that's coming out. I don't actually know the title of it, but we have a member in our community named Paul Ossenkup, and he has done a bunch of research on what you are talking about. He tours the country speaking about how humor changes, can change how your brain functions and why it's so important. So I don't remember the name of it, but I remember him telling me one of the research studies that he read was something about which is why I think, I don't know where I'm going with this, but he said that if you take the active practice of finding five things that you found funny in one day, that just that consistency of like looking for humorous things, looking for the funny, rather than in this kind of like this positivity thinking that we're retraining our brain to look for funny things rather than to just focus on the kind of negative stuff that's happening in our life.
Yeah, is a comedian. Her name is Esmeralda Rose, and she is a natural comedian.
Yeah,
she'll grab a toy and come up and throw it down in front of you and look at you like, you know, chase me. The other dog just watches like, care less. Yep. But funny where we find funniness.
Yes. Yeah. And to pay attention to that is to like bring.
I like your idea so much because we've just pointed out all this research about how laughter is good for us. And it sensitized me. Like I told you, I set out trying to make people laugh today. Just because it makes me laugh too, and I know it's good for them. And so I'm going to challenge everyone in the audience.
I like this.
I'll give an example. I had a little spot taken off of my face this week. So there's this big red spot on my right cheek. And it feels, you know, like sort of like a beacon when you've got it on your cheek. So I thought, what could be funny about this? And so I told my dental hygienist this morning, it really distracts from my saggy butt. So
I didn't think that was funny.
That was a good answer, Arthur. The point is, I was trying to characterize something that might be challenging into something that could be humorous. Mm-hmm. And kind of an awkward process here, but it was an outright example of what we all need to do, which is try to find the humor in things.
Yeah, I think the more, like, I love thinking of you today intentionally deciding you're going to make a couple of people laugh, because it is, you know, that's an expansive energy to put in into the world. But you don't know that that hygienist, then their day is turned just a little bit, and maybe they shared some of that with another person. And our town now benefits from this little ripple of positivity, and negativity can function the same way. It's contractive.
Oh, yes.
And so if you had been the opposite of how you were in your seat, they might have had a little worse day, and they might have taken it out on somebody crossing the street, and that person might have, you know, like the chain can go one way or the other.
There's
and put some power in your hands.
A guy standing on the corner, you know how they, at, in Bozeman, other places, like homeless or whatever. Well, this guy took a different tack, and it was humorous, and I bet somebody was going to give him money. It said dystopic, what was it?
Immigrant.
Dystopic immigrant.
We died laughing.
So,
I think if we could just impress upon the audience how pure gold humor is for each of us, for our health,
if
for our children.
For a New Year's resolution, that would be a good one.
To
times a day, try and make
and go to the comedy club.
And go to the comedy club.
And go to the comedy club if you're looking to directly support artists.
Resolution here. Go to the comedy club.
Yes.
And what time does it start in the evening?
We have most nights, so during the weeknights, if we just have one show, it's at 8.
8.
And then on the weekends, we have shows starting at 7.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the other resolution is take some humor with you. You've got five people, or one person five times.
Yeah, that counts too.
Yeah, let's try to get five laughs
laughs.
Our day today.
Yes.
I have to run to my...
Yes, we sure love having you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Five more minutes and we'll keep laughing.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming.
Have a good afternoon, dear.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be lots of humor in your...
Levin O'Connor.
Yeah. Lots of humor in Stanley's performance. Not specifically Stanley's, but the kids.
Yeah.
You know.
Molly, do you have a favorite comedian?
Do I have? Oh my gosh, that's a really great question.
I
resonate with, there's like improvisers, obviously, like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, and then Steve Martin was one of my very early, like, guys that I enjoyed, and Steve Martin and Bill Murray. Like The Jerk, my friends and I would replay The Jerk in our, you know, over and over again. But I also love people like Maria Bamford, if you've studied, she has a book out just now about kind of her mental health struggles that she's gone through and how comedy has helped with that. And so I really love her. I mean, we've had like some amazing comedians at the club that I really love. Gareth Reynolds was amazing. I don't know, you know? I couldn't pick a favorite. That's a really hard question. It's like picking your favorite kid.
You mentioned several great ones. And I was thinking about your families, those of you in this business. Mm-hmm. What kind of reflection do you get back from the children about humor in your home?
That's interesting. I hope that when they're older, I do have a daughter who is a sophomore in college, and she, I think, laughs at me, not at me, but, you know, she laughs with me more when I'm trying to make her laugh. But I think there's an age where, you know, when they're really young, it's great, right? Because you're just playing with them, you're making them laugh, it's very fun. And then they get to that phase where they're like, oh God, here she goes again with her bits, you know, could you just stop, please? But I think that that's transitionary. And so like, we will eventually come to the point where they, our kids have enjoyed some of the shows that I've been a part of and have come down for some of the comedy. And I think that, I am sure you guys can relate to this, but when you see your kid laughing about something, it brings you a lot of joy. Mm-hmm. And if I can be the person making them laugh, that's doubly so wonderful. But just to be able, because I think, again, we in those middle school, like high school years, it feels very heavy for them. And I think that they do need some more humor. And so I hope that my injection of that into our family life will, in hindsight for them as they get older, make them think, wow, I'm really glad that I was able to laugh.
I can only see that. Assume that is absolutely true.
Should one buy a book of jokes and learn them?
I mean, I think it's always fun and can be very surprising at parties. We just had some drinks with some friends last night and took turns telling jokes that were surprising. And it is a fun, it is a fun tool to kind of open up a room, to start a conversation, to do any of that.
Well, I used it with my patients.
Yeah.
When I was working, like, humor is abstract thinking and is very helpful for cognition. So, I mean, a simple joke like, if a buttercup's yellow, what color is a hiccup? What is the answer, Arnis?
Yeah, what is the answer?
I try not to think about it.
We just
purple.
Laugh at,
oh, purple. See, my kids know that joke by heart, and they all go, Grammy! But the fact is that humor helps us at any stage, and those patients, I gave them that joke to talk to others, and so humor plays a great role in cognition and reduces stress, as we've said. Cortisol is that evil hormone that comes out, and it actually takes away and reduces cortisol when we use good humor.
Yeah.
We have probably 2 or 3 minutes. What can we laugh about in the remaining 2 or 3 minutes?
Yeah, do you have any jokes? Who's your...
Albina, the ones I laugh at. No one else laughs at them.
So, I think...
I tend to play on words and they're is he doing it again?
Well, there is a... It's also a performance art too, right? Like that's what stand-up comedians are... It's so fascinating to me. Again, just working at the comedy club and seeing so many... Like, people do the same set over and over and over again, and how they tweak and turn how they say things. It's a storytelling practice for a lot of, you know, or, like, how you tell the joke is as important as the content of that joke.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, yeah, it's, you know, it is a very unique thing to be able to observe somebody enjoying comedy. What do they find funny? Why is it funny? And then to repeat that and to heighten that and maximize that when you're telling your own jokes. But I don't know.
In one study, a boy about 9 years old, his diabetes had his blood pressure very high, and he was very ill and in the hospital. And they had all the machines going, and they all left the room, and his mother was there with him, and they watched a comedy show. And he laughed the whole 30 minutes. Well, when the medical team came back around to monitor his vitals that were so frightening, they had decreased magnificently.
Wow.
And he was almost at normal levels just with 30 minutes of outright laughter. And so I would like to challenge you to help us contact the university psychology professors and say, we need a course on humor, and talk to the medical association about the good golden value of humor.
Yeah.
It's medical practice.
It is.
So I think there's so much more than just telling a joke here. Mm-hmm. There's just a whole world in this topic.
Yeah, there really is. We could go on and on, right?
Absolutely.
I sure could. Yeah.
And as we end this program, again, Happy New Year's Eve and a Happy New Year. And for those who want to feel better, who feel like you're down or depressed, go to the comedy club. Reach out. It's therapy. If you don't want to do that kind of therapy, call 988 or 41 or 211. And ask for someone to talk to. But you're going to have to learn to laugh. This is a good way to start. Take some of the suggestions offered today. And this will make your 2024 much happier. We can guarantee it. So again, reach out. Don't be a loner. Seek help. Go to a group. Go to the comedy club. And listen to KGVM or KGVM 95.9 or KGVM.org. Go there and listen to this program again, because it will be in the archives. It will be listed, and you can laugh all that you want in this coming new year. Thank you for listening to us today.